Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
R.J. Reynolds would have hired Uncle Chen as a pitch man. Look at this. This guy's running. Did you run a marathon in 3 hours and 28 minutes in China last week? I didn't. Maybe I need to start smoking. Either that or start running. I don't know. Or both.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
If I'm living somewhere and it's snowing on 4th of July, I'm not living there anymore. But plain and simple, I'm not living there anymore.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Ah, forget it. I'm riding the bus. Put me on the bus. Boise. Young Josh Allen. Dirt Cutter. Let's go.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to Pod. It is 1 week to Thanksgiving. It is the time to be thankful for things. And I can tell you what I'm thankful for. Snowmaction. Midweek snowmaction.
It has enlivened this week, that's for sure.
Western Michigan 12, Central Michigan 10 in a snowstorm. Absolutely great. And the celebration, the whole thing. Two long touchdown runs. Kelly Short Stadium, they needed a snowplow. Love it. Love Maction. Probably their best move was just moving games to the week. Just whatever.
Oh, let's do it. I mean, captive audience.
The victory cannon.
And did you see somebody made a very lifelike snow fan? Not a snowman, but a fan in the stands.
A snow like mannequin.
Life size. Yeah. Yeah, it was good. Like, super impressive.
Yeah.
They know what to do with snow up there in Michigan. They can handle it. No chicken broth being dispensed, I don't
Mount Pleasant. That
game. No.
Oh, no. LSU would have forfeited. That's it. Snow. Snow action. Snow action.
This is mid-November. Wait till mid-December when a mid-December playoff game up there in an LSU or an Auburn or Alabama have to travel up to Michigan to play in 2 feet of snow.
Well, they're their elevations there at Mount Pleasant, which is oddly flat as a pancake. It's not really. There's no Pleasant Mountain. Let's put it that way. But it doesn't matter. It's snow. All right. So we have this odd week where college football decides not to be interesting. And my posit is that it will be interesting anyway. So I want to play a little game because we're all about gimmicks here. A weak podcast host needs gimmicks, and I am weak. So we have, by my count, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 contenders have kind of tricky games. Obviously, we have USC playing UCLA. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. And then North Carolina is playing Georgia Tech. So that would be a monumental upset. But there are basically 9 teams with any kind of shot. And I don't really know if North Carolina's got a shot. But 7 of them play teams that are either between 5-5 and 7-3. And if there is if one of them stumbles, it would certainly be a significant upset, but not, you know, the total shocker, right? So I want to pick which one of these teams should be most concerned. Okay, we have Tennessee at 6-4 South Carolina. We have Ohio State at 6-4 Maryland. We have TCU at 6-4 Baylor. We have 5-5 Miami at Clemson. We have 5-5 UAB at LSU. We have 7-3 Illinois at Michigan. And we have Georgia at 6-4 Kentucky. So there's a range there. Some are at home, some are on the road. But this is what I want to know. Who are you, would you be least surprised, or what contender should be most concerned heading into week 12 here? Pat, what do you think?
I'm going with the Horned Frogs, and I love them, and I've enjoyed the story and enjoyed this season, but they have played a lot of close games. If this game against Baylor is 10 points or less, it would be their 7th straight win by 10 or less, which would be the first time anybody's done that since Colgate in 1975. Tells you how rare it is for them to be kind of walking this tightrope. So, you know, Baylor's a quality team. I know last week they just like absolutely coughed up a hairball against Kansas State, but Kansas State has made some teams look bad. Other than that, 6-4, they still have a little bit of that, you know, title DNA in them from last year winning the Big 12. Dave Aranda's a good coach. He'll have some defensive plans to deal with the TCU passing game and with Kendre Miller on the running game. So I think since TCU is always in a close game, this one could be the one that that takes them down.
Well, I agree. I would have said TCU as well, but since you took it, I'll say probably my second pick would be either Illinois or South Carolina to go in and actually upset either Michigan or Tennessee. You know, the Vols traveling into a place that can be pretty wild there in Columbia, and the Gamecocks have played pretty well this season. Second year under Shane Beamer, they're playing pretty solid. So I could see that one being close in the same. This probably isn't the best time to be talking about Illinois. They've dropped a couple of games that we did not expect over the last month. But to go in the Big House maybe and keep it close, you know, defensively, they've been playing pretty well most of the season. So I would say one of those two, but I'm with Pat. I think the most likely is TCU. Now, I think I picked against TCU. I picked TCU to lose like 5 of the last 6 weeks, and they keep coming back to win. So, though this week I picked Baylor, or I picked TCU to win, and so I'm sure that Baylor will win. You know, this will be the week. You know that TCU will fold.
TCU is a Christian school, and Baylor is a Baptist school.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there's a big difference there.
Don't bring religion into this.
I'm not sure what it is, but it's a big rivalry. So that is certainly. I don't know.
I do know you can buy alcohol in TCU Stadium, but you can't buy alcohol in Baylor Stadium.
Okay, maybe that's the difference. Is that, I believe that was in Leviticus. So there's a just no. Yeah, no. I mean, I agree, TCU. I'm going to go with Maryland. The obvious choice is taken. I'm going to take Maryland as a trap for Ohio State. They often play Ohio State okay. They can run the ball. We're pretty far down the list here. I'd be pretty shocked. But I think Maryland's all right. And I don't think Ohio State's been challenged a whole lot. And I like the Maryland rushing attack. Roman Hemby is a good player. And if they can run the ball, if they can establish the run, have a big game that way, keep C.J. Stroud off the field, maybe he got a chance. But we'll see. It's going to be pretty wild. Any others that worry you, Pat? Kentucky? Could Kentucky rise up?
No. Kentucky's offensive line is horrible, and that is the last thing you need against Georgia because their defensive line will wreck you. I think Will Levis is in for a very long day of being chased around. I don't see Chris Rodriguez being able to get loose on the run. You would have to hope for Georgia to play very sloppily offensively, I think, to give you a chance. And I do remember, Dan, to your point with Maryland, I mean, I don't see it happening, but I do remember very clearly watching the game 4 years ago where Ohio State barely got out of College Park, 52-51, and it's because Maryland missed, I think it was a two-point pass with a guy wide open.
Yep.
In the end zone. So, you know, stranger things have happened, I suppose, although not a lot. But, you know, that's one to keep an eye on for sure.
That was the year they fired Durkin, right? And they had all the issues. And I think Matt Canada was the interim head coach. And they had this wide open two-pointer to win the game. And Matt Canada might get the full-time job if they make that pass. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a crazy one.
Yeah, 52-51. I watched it in Eddie George's restaurant in Columbus where there were a lot of very, very nervous Ohio State fans.
So, yeah, it's – I mean, I don't know. I don't like any of them, but here's the thing. Are you going to – would you bet a 7-team parlay, no money line on all seven and just take the favorites? Probably one of them's going to lose.
Right.
Although maybe not. I don't know what odds you'd get on that.
Probably one of them's going to lose, but it would be a fun parlay bet.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's if you're looking at all of them going, no way, no way, no way, there's a huge separation between the top and the middle, then maybe that's a bet. Don't take betting advice for me. All of our race for the case is an utter disaster. So
yeah. The only good news about the race for the case is that it's close.
We're like the Big Ten West of gambling predictions.
That's exactly what we are.
Somebody has to win, and that sweet case of beer is going to taste just as good.
Yes, it will.
Somebody has to win. All right. The big game this weekend is UCLA hosting USC. UCLA blew what would have been a top 10 matchup, but still 7 versus 16. It's going to be prime time. It's at the Rose Bowl. It's going to be sold out. The uniforms are great. Big night for college football in Los Angeles, which has not had a whole lot of big nights in college football of late. And game day is not there. They're going to Montana, which is cool. Good to see them do some FCS. And quite honestly, you're not getting anybody from UCLA and USC to show up at game day at 9 in the morning at the Rose Bowl. Yeah. That many hours before the game, so. Might as well go somewhere else. But thoughts on this? This is the showcase game, and this is obviously classic West Coast football. It's also Big Ten football going forward. How fortuitous was it for the Big Ten, which would have taken these two schools no matter what, to get them and then have them start surging towards the top? Have these two dynamic coaches, these two dynamic offenses, and kind of have this showcase game. You know, like the SEC took Oklahoma and Texas, and neither team's done anything. Doesn't mean they're not good choices, but kind of cool to have your two teams that you're bringing in provide a pop. Ross, what are your thoughts on the timing of getting USC and UCLA and what this game Saturday could mean?
Yeah, like what of all the years, right, for this to happen, for USC and UCLA to both be this good. This is an incredible one, the one in which they announced that they are moving on in a couple of years. So that's, I'm sure, no fun if you're a Pac-12 person seeing this happen, because these were the two teams you're probably rooting against after the news broke. But if you're in the Big Ten, you're pretty pumped. You're pretty excited. I know they're going to have, you know, the biggest crowd they've had in years at the Rose Bowl. They've taken off some of the tarps. They're expecting over 70,000 people at the Rose Bowl. So pretty incredible stuff. Should be electric, should be wild, and should include zero defense. 55-50 final score. Yeah, something like that. So it should be exciting. Yeah.
To your point, Dan, do you think that this had any impact on the choice of game day beyond not getting a crowd out there at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. Pacific?
Ooh,
that UCLA and USC, first of all, the game's on Fox, but secondly, they are going to the Big Ten in a move that Fox was very much involved in. I suggest that that's the time you pick an FCS game to go see, when the alternative is to go see the two prize new acquisitions of the Big Ten / Fox Empire. So I just thought that might have had something to do with the choice there. Maybe not. But yeah, phenomenal timing for the Big Ten and for Fox. It is funny. Like if you put on a continuum, certainly for the last 15 years, like, or 20, really going back to whenever Pete Carroll finally stopped winning at USC, 15 years. Texas, Oklahoma here, and USC, UCLA there. Like, those two properties moving along in terms of actual football success, USC and UCLA would not be anywhere near where Texas and Oklahoma have been, at least one of them. And it's funny now that you get to this point where the actual mergers and acquisitions are going on, and all of a sudden USC and UCLA, this year at least, are the much more successful properties. So, you know, it's exciting for college football in general in a vacuum, and for Los Angeles football fans, because, as you said, I mean, it's always just a gorgeous setting, great stadium, great uniforms. I will be watching with great enthusiasm, but in terms of, we'll see whether it's going to have any impact on the college football playoff. That depends on USC. If you're the Pac-12, you really, I mean, Oregon losing hurt badly. because you were set for a big weekend with this game in Los Angeles and then Utah and Oregon playing in Eugene. And, you know, Oregon could still end up winning the league. So could Utah. But for now, the weekend, the centerpiece is in Los Angeles with two schools that are ditching you.
Yeah, I mean, look, Chip Kelly's recruited kind of in a different philosophy than maybe a lot of us expected, but USC isn't. I mean, the key to these programs is telling all these kids in L.A., particularly all these quarterbacks that are currently killing it in the SEC, you don't have to leave. And big nights, big games, big atmospheres can be had here. And that's been a hard thing for either of these two teams to set up. They both play in these absolutely cavernous old stadiums. Yeah. And the LA Coliseum is easier to get people to, but the Rose Bowl is not. It's nowhere near the UCLA campus. It's all that. So just big nights for football in LA are huge because you've got, you want these kids to say, hey, I'm staying home. I'm playing for one of these two. And so I think this will be a step in that direction because there's a lot of talent, but they all seem to be going somewhere else right now. That's why the Pac-12 is trying to find ways to play as many games in LA as possible. You know, it's funny. They moved their title game to Vegas, which is probably perfect, but in the same way, I think SoFi Stadium might be a better recruiting base wise going forward.
Definitely. You know,
we'll see, but certainly be good. Good night for both things. It could be hopefully an entertaining game. The other game out West that I find really interesting is, we're going to pick it and race for the case, so let's not pick it, but Boise State and Wyoming playing for the Mountain West, whatever division they're in, either Mountain or West, I don't know. I think they're Mountain. In Mountain.
They're the Mountain.
They're in Mountain. Yep. That makes sense, right?
I still think, like, I am still angry at both the ACC and the Mountain West for their ridiculously literal division names. The Mountain and the West, the Atlantic and the Coastal. Come on, man. Do a little
better. The mountains that the Boise and Wyoming are in is also west. So,
yes.
I don't know. Yeah, the mountain division. Anyway, they're playing for it. And what's interesting is, so two things. One, Boise State was cooked. They were horrible early in the year. Lost to UTEP, like big. Yeah. And they're all everything quarterback, Hank Bachmeier, leaves. They fire Tim Plow, their offensive coordinator. They're 2-2. Everyone's ready to fire Andy Avalos. And since then, they've rallied to be 7-3. They've won every game except a tough loss to BYU. They're undefeated in the Mountain West. Dick Cotter kind of took over as the OC. He was like hanging around there as a consultant and like going salmon fishing or something. I don't know. And then they have this, I think, redshirt freshman, Talon Green, step in. And he's been unbelievable.
Yeah,
He's 6'6". His last five outings, 78 of 117 for 1,097 yards and 7 touchdowns. He also can run the ball. He's a freshman, no one recruit out of Texas. And Craig Bohl, the Wyoming coach, dubbed him a young Josh Allen this week.
Holy which,
wow. Look at there.
Not joking. Yeah, he's also had 6 TDs as a runner. Yeah, this is all in a Cody Tucker story. Cody Tucker writes for one of my favorite named websites, covers Wyoming. The website's 7220 Sports. Which is the elevation of Larry.
Elevation.
Yeah. Love it.
They painted on the wall of the basketball arena. I don't know whether it's at the football stadium, but they want the visitors to know.
It's in the, as your visitor tunnel.
Yeah.
It's in the visitor's thing. Like you're not going to get any oxygen.
Yep.
And I have an old story of Jerry Tarkanian had his UNLV teams up there. And one of his players, this is how Tark told the story. It sounds perhaps true or not. One of his players said, hey, coach, I'm worried about this. They say there's not enough oxygen up here. And Tark told him, that's only true outside. It's not inside. Don't worry about it.
Uh,
great.
Player like, okay, great. Thanks, coach. I feel better already. Yeah.
Sounds like a chicken dinner circuit story. I don't know if that's right. actually true, but that's old Tark story about playing in Laramie. Anyway, this one's in Laramie. Anyone see Boise coming back? And then I'll get to the Wyoming part, which is also like came back from the grave.
Yeah, no, I did not. And I mean, it's impressive. And you like to see it because that's just a program that's been very successful. A lot of pride in the development they've made over 20 plus years. And you talk about Dirk Cutter. I mean, he birthed the program. That's when they started becoming good. And I covered a humanitarian bowl between Louisville and Boise State in 1999 and 22 degree day out there when Boise won. And that was one of their big steps forward, was to win a bowl game against somebody, you know, other than Montana Tech. And it was also, that was also Y2K. Like that was New Year's Eve, 1999 and 2000. Like the next day you're just waking. Remember there was all that concern, like the computers were all going to go to hell. Yep. And like, we're all worried. Like, is the plane going to be able to leave? Are we going to be able to go? Are we going to be stuck in Boise for the rest of our lives, or what's going to happen here? But
did you make it? No, did you make it out alive, Pat?
Yeah. We did. I'm here to tell the story.
I feel like the survivalists, the Y2K people, that was a thing. That was definitely a thing. The Y2K people were building bunkers and stuff. The world was going to end. But I felt like they all lived in Idaho, so you would have been fine.
I mean, I could have certainly found a bunker to hunker down in, for sure.
Man, I forgot about that thing. What a crock of like garbage that one was.
Yes, it was.
People were legit scared.
Oh, yeah. One of the great false alarms in human history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, nothing happened. Planes were going to drop out of the sky and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
But no, I'm glad you made it, Pat. I'm glad
you
survived.
Thank you. Yep. Me too. But if you look at Boise's offense since then, I mean, Dirk Cutter knows what he's doing. So good for them. I did look. I'm very disappointed. The weather in Wyoming, I wish they were playing today, where it's high of 16 or high of 26. It's currently 16. Low of 5, 100% chance of snow. Friday, high of 20, low of -4.
Oof.
Then it gets soft on Saturday. Goes up to 34 with a low of 3. Oh, so it's going to be nicer weather than I had hoped for.
Oh, that's bikini weather. Yeah, that's bikini weather. It was a great weather day in Wyoming. It once snowed on the 4th of July, and there's like pictures of like snow coming down during like a parade. You're like the people got their flags out. In the
Oh my God.
Hey man, it's Wyoming. 4th Anything of can July. Happen. Up there.
I remember being stunned when I lived in Columbia, Missouri, and I drove up in May, early May. I drove up to Iowa for something, and they're like, you know, bring a coat. And I'm like, it's May. And they're like, bring a coat. And I drove up there and there was snow still on the ground. I was shocked, and that was May. I cannot imagine it snow. If I'm living somewhere and it's snowing on 4th of July, I'm not living there anymore. But plain and simple, I'm not living there anymore. But
well, not many people have chosen to live in Wyoming. The place has been open for business for a few hundred years, and there's only like 500,000 people live there. So much of the world has also looked at Wyoming though. And said, I think I'll move on.
Yeah,
I think
it's a good
place to drive
rather
through.
Not.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It is incredible. Their turnaround at Boise, though, going back to that, has been incredible. I mean, the first part of the season, I mean, they were completely dysfunctional. I mean, it was hard to watch. Like, they got beat down by Oregon State to start the year. They struggled with New Mexico in UT Martin. There were times where they really struggled in those games. They got whipped by UTEP. It was bizarre, and then they kind of went on that roll. They named what's his Talen Green, the starting quarterback before the game against San Diego State, and then they just started tearing it up with Dirk calling plays and Talen running them. They've scored 35 points, 40 points, 49 points, 28 points, 41 points. So they have been putting up some serious yardage and points, and it's been a phenomenal turnaround. Really impressive. Says a lot about that quarterback. Says a lot probably about Dirk Cutter too, back in the fold. How about that? The head coach of Tampa Bay Buccaneers just like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So Taylen Green is from Lewisville, Texas. He's literally ranked like 1,200th in the 24/7 rankings, which God bless whoever gets to over 1,000 and has to put that list together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Some poor intern at 24/7. But there's times I just don't understand. Like if there's a kid who's 6'6 and can run.
Right.
Like I think you got to at least rank him 750th. Like, right. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, who knows? But it's sort of like you watch Josh Allen. You're like, wait, how did nobody recruit him?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, look at how big this dude is. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Well, I don't know. I don't know if he's a young Josh Allen or old Craig Bowles trying to throw some extra pressure.
Yeah.
It's not really fair. Josh Allen, when he was young, wasn't that good, by the way. So if he's a young Josh Allen, he's going to throw like a lot of interceptions and be all over the place. But good for Taylen. Okay, so the opposite side of this is Craig Bowles, your old school terrific football coach, and he's done a lot of great stuff at Wyoming. Last season was not it. They had a poor season. 10 transfers right away. Everyone bailed out. They lost their running back to Arizona State. Bad move there. They lost both their quarterbacks and it took a snap. Everyone ran, and there was a lot of – this was the epitome of the program. And Wyoming may, as to Ross's point about the weather, may always struggle with this in people want to – the transfer portal, right? You got any kind of talent, any big school will take you. I mean, Arizona State is a tire fire, and they still went in there and got your best player, right? So this is the transfer portal poorly. Now, two things happen. One – Bowles a great coach. He goes to the transfer portal. They got like five guys out of the Big Ten looking for playing time. They just reloaded that way. So it giveth and it taketh. But I found this to be one of the most interesting things. He said it in the preseason. And it stuck with me. I was wondering how this would play out. But he said they tried to find out why everyone left. And one of the things was the players felt that they didn't know their head coach. And he was just sort of he was treating them like an old school way and wasn't learning about them, didn't have a personal connection. And so he says the first place you look is at yourself is to see where you can improve. One of the things I felt that like I needed to get better on was connecting more with our players. I needed to get more engaged and let players know where they stood, where we are going. Not so much recruit them all the time, but I think people want feedback, even if it's negative feedback. They want to know they matter. And I think we could do that a little better. He started eating almost all his meals with the team and sitting with guys at just hanging out with them more. And this is an old school coach who made an adjustment rather than just complain about the transfer portal, made an adjustment, connected with his team. And, you know, they're a game from winning the division, which is a hell of a thing at Wyoming.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that boy, some lessons perhaps to be learned there. Are you listening, Jimbo Fisher? And some other coaches who had been successful and set in their ways and things are going to hell around you. And like, are you just going to say, this modern era sucks? Or are you going to do something about changing your own self and your way you navigate things? I go back to what Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame when he had the 4-8 season. He looked himself in the mirror and said, I got to do some things differently. So good for Craig Bowl for doing that, because sometimes when you're really good at something for a long time, it can be hard to convince yourself that you have to alter your approach.
Yeah, change is hard, especially for these like older football coaches who have been doing things one way for so long and who had coaches do things the same way for so long, you know? And the new generation of kid, the Generation Z, is, let's just be frank, right? Just more sensitive, like more sensitive mentally, right? And there's a lot of obviously mental health talk like going on right now. Like you can't operate like you have. Coaches can't operate like they have. And the younger coaches, I think, understand that, but the 55, 50 plus or so or whatever, I guess, like they don't, certainly the 60 plus, I think Craig Bowles is like 64 or 65.
64 years old.
They don't understand that as much, and they don't change, and it leads to poor performance. And so credit him for like, hey, I need to change. Like, this is what's happening, and we got to adjust to it. It's like NIL too. You know, you got coaches that do not agree with it, But they realize, like, this is it. Like, this is the new thing, and we're going to have to do it, or we're going to be left behind. And it's the same when it comes to the approach to players. Like, you can't drive players like you used to into the ground and have a relationship with them that's more of like, you know, taskmaster instead of, you know, they want more of like friend, like, you know, person you can go and talk to and all that stuff.
Yeah, he says it's just interesting. 64, I mean, he's been coaching, I guess, his seventh or eighth year at Wyoming. He was at North Dakota State. He built that program up, but he's been a head coach since 2003. And yeah, changed his ways, and they went, you know, they were 2-6 in the Mountain West last year. They did make a bowl, and they did win the former Humanitarian Bowl, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. It was a good call by the Boise Bowl to just go with the potato, just lean into the potato thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't they dump French fries on them? They dump French fries.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
No,
it's, yeah, that's awesome. You,
the Humanitarian Bowl. That had to have been fake. Like, that's like the... Humanitarian Bowl. Oh, God. I mean,
you're in Idaho. You got potatoes. Use the potatoes. Market the potatoes.
The Y2K box. Yeah. Go ahead.
Real quick. But on that point of what Ross was saying there, I don't know if you guys saw the video/audio of Tua Tagovailoa talking to Mike McDaniel, the coach of the Dolphins, who's 39 years old. And the approach, their conversations, it was on Twitter on Thursday. They were so low key and like almost colleague to colleague, as it wasn't coach to player as much. And you know, I just think that finding ways now to communicate to young people is just so different from a coaching standpoint. And Mike McDaniel seems like somebody who's kind of figured that out.
Yeah, I wonder if Craig Bowl can turn this transfer portal into like a Wyoming thing. Like, look, man, show up, play here. You need a fifth year. You need a last year. We have a lot of, like, you know, he's the unwitting players coach in the unwitting players program. And we'll get you out of here before it's really cold. I don't know. I mean, it's just interesting. But great job by Wyoming, whatever happens this weekend.
When you mentioned it earlier, Dan, but when all those players, like, left this past offseason, it got so bad. I remember, you know, Wyoming did the unprecedented thing, I believe, of like, I think it was a statement they put out, and Craig Bowl like tweeted it out, and the university tweeted out, like basically saying, we lost a lot of players. We're okay. We still have a program. And if you're interested, you should transfer here. Like, it was bizarre. It was crazy. Like, it was weird. And then a couple other schools followed. Yeah. It was like unprecedented. Yeah.
Help wanted sign out there.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like when if a kicker didn't Steve Spurrier put like an ad in the student paper once for a kicker after his kickers were missing or something like that.
Would not surprise me.
We need a kicker. Anyway. All right. I want to, we're going to make the picks in a sec, but I think we all, this is a small sample Heisman I'm going to hand out 2 days early.
Oh, please do.
3 days early. A 50-year-old runner from China competed in the, I can't pronounce it, marathon, which is in China. He finished in 3 hours and 28 minutes, finished 574th, nothing overwhelming there. But he did it while chain smoking an entire pack of cigarettes. Known as Uncle Chen.
Hero.
Uncle Chen
Uncle
ran
Chen.
All 20... Uncle Chen, that's what they call him on Weibo, which is it's like the Twitter of China.
Awesome.
He ran all 26 miles chain smoking a pack of heaters. there's pictures of him.
Awesome.
Now there's 20 cigarettes in a pack. There's 26 miles in the race. So it's like a little one, just over every mile marker. He done it. He was he had a story written about him in Runner's World back in 2017, known as the Smoking Brother. That's what they called him.
Oh my God! I'm looking at pictures now. Oh my God!
Yeah,
he smoked a pack during multiple. This is not the first one. He did an 18, 19. He ran. Yeah, so that's his thing. He is not afraid to He likes nicotine and running. And then, yeah. So small sample Heisman, right? Yeah. I mean, I feel this is.
Oh,
yeah. Hands off to Uncle Chen.
Yeah, absolutely. So tremendous. Light it up, baby.
And he ain't going no nicotine patch. He wants the real deal. Light them, smoke them while you're going. It's tremendous. I will say, Dan, did you cover the 08 Olympics in Beijing?
Yes, I did.
If you like my memory, one of my memories of that Olympics was like you go down by where the shops and stuff are, was the guys that worked in the shops would go outside for their breaks and they would squat down like on the sidewalk and roll their shirts up over their bellies and light up a cigarette. And it wouldn't stand up. They would squat down like almost like sitting on the ground, like kind of like sitting on their haunches and smoke, waiting for customers to come in. Then they'd roll down their shirt and go in and help the customer. It was an interesting look, I will say.
A lot of cigarettes in China, no question.
A lot of cigarettes.
Oh, yes. Uncle Chen, by the way, 50 years old. He's aged poorly, and surprisingly too, right? Because he smokes a pack of cigarettes as he's running a marathon. Shockingly, that he looks like he's like 70 instead of 50. But poor Uncle.
He does
Chen.
Not look 50.
Keep lighting it up, boy.
I mean, if you're smoking a pack while running in 3.5 hours, how many more packs are you smoking are you, when you're sitting around?
When not running, yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah. How about the poor guys that are getting secondhand smoke? They're trying to run a damn marathon.
Yeah, I would not be happy if I were another runner. I would
need a smoking section in this race. Uncle Chen. Hey, man, smoke them if you got them, I guess. Back in the day, right? Remember when you ever watched like Mad Men and they would try to they had the cigarettes as their advertising client? And like big tobacco, they pretend they had like a doctor say it was not bad for you.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, like the tobacco companies would have, RJ Reynolds would have hired Uncle Chen as a pitch man.
Look at this. Hell yeah.
This guy's run it. Did you run a marathon in 3 hours and 28 minutes in China last week? I didn't. Maybe I need to start smoking. Either that or start running. I don't know. Or both. Anyway, Uncle Chen, we're with you.
They would have put him on the defense stand in some of those fraud trials for sure.
All right, let's pick these games. All right, let's start with this. Bedlam. Ain't too many of them left. So speaking of smoke them while you got them. Number 22, Oklahoma State at unranked Oklahoma. Is this the last? This might be the last visit of the Cowboys to Norman. OU is giving 7.5 games at 7:30 on ABC. Pat, who you got in Bedlam?
I'll take 7.5 with the Pokes. Are you kidding me? That's a lot of points. I know, like, Oklahoma State absolutely bottomed out at Kansas State, at Kansas, got routed in both those games. Then Spencer Sanders came back. They beat Iowa State. I think they got their feet back under them. Spencer Sanders, their quarterback, who's been really good and also really banged up, said he is absolutely playing in this game. No way he's not. So he will be on the field. And Oklahoma's not good, all right? Oklahoma's lost their last two. They had a brief revival. They beat Kansas and Iowa State, but otherwise they've lost 5 of their last 7. So give me a touchdown plus. With the Pokes, and this game always, I think, means a little more to the Pokes, although they haven't had a lot of success other than last year, but it meant a lot last year and they won. So I'm going to take the Pokes and the points.
Yeah, I'm the same. That seems like a lot of points in a rivalry game. Rivalry games are usually pretty tight and emotional and all that stuff. And the fact that, as Pat said, Oklahoma is just not very good. And lost the last two, including at West Virginia. So I don't know that Oklahoma State's going to win the game, but certainly cover the 7.5.
I'll take Oklahoma State to cover in this game, even though on multiple occasions this year they've made me out to look like a fool in my personal life while bragging about them being a lock for the week. It's a pretty big number. I'll ride with them again. The season's starting to wind down. So we'll take another chance with them.
Okay, you guys suck at picking. And Vegas, when they do this, this is the rule. Teddy Greenstein is going to text me and say you violated the rule. No, I'm going with the Sooners. Unranked team, huge favorite at home. the unranked team wins the game, I'm going to say the Sooners are going to win and they're going to cover. The last people I want to listen to are you three. I'm winning that beer. Hear that?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, our picks suck, but so do yours, brother.
Yeah, you're in a game and a half back, buddy.
I didn't see mine.
You're 11 games below 500, and I'm 9 games below 500 in the lead. How about that? Boom. Roasted.
God, we're bad.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Terrible. Boise State at Wyoming. We've already discussed it. Broncos are giving 14. Go, Wyo, go is a 14-point dog in Laramie. 7 p.m. CBS Sports Network. Weather's going to be decent. Ross, who you got?
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, pretty big home dogs this week. And this is another one where you just got the home team. It's a big old dog, and I'm going to take the home dog. So give me Wyoming to cover the 14 in the chilly confines of Laramie.
That's so many points. I'm fully convinced Boise's going to win, but gosh, that's a lot of points.
They have a young Josh Allen. They have a young Josh Allen.
14 and a hook?
No hook. 14 straight.
Okay, 14 straight. Ah, forget it. I'm riding the bus. Put me on the bus. Boise. Young Josh Allen. Dirk Cutter. Let's go.
You guys got me so fired up about Craig Bohl that there's no way that I can pick against Wyoming. I don't know why. I'm sitting here like, let me play for this dude. What's going on here? So I'll go with Wyoming in this game to cover the 14. I like everything about this operation that he's got going. So I'll go with Wyoming.
I did more recruiting for Wyoming on this podcast than any national media member has done in the history of the program.
Seriously.
I mean, I had it going.
They're going to send you some of their lovely brown and yellow merch, I think, here for gratitude for you becoming their recruiter.
All I want is every Wyoming fan to tell all the other fans to listen to this pod and our ratings don't tank because I spent 10 minutes talking about Wyoming. This podcast better be number one in Casper. We better own Cheyenne this week. My God.
Casper, Cody.
How Wyoming, to kill podcast Cheyenne, listenership. Yeah. Let's talk about Wyoming. Okay. Good thinking. I'm taking Wyoming. 14's too many. Too many. I'm taking Wyoming. All right. Iowa at Minnesota. Minnesota's given 2.5, 4 p.m. on Fox. Over under is a meager 32.5. Iowa has got this incredible record where they win more if they punt at least 8 times.
Amazing.
So 32.5 is the over under.
That is incredible.
Get your naps in. Pat, who you got in this?
A 32.5 over under is just like unfathomable. I really can't even get my head around that, but it fits for this game because my God, you were looking at two teams that can't do anything offensively. Since Tanner Morgan is still, we don't know whether he's going to play or not at quarterback for Minnesota. If they don't have him, they got Mo Ibrahim and they got nothing else. And Iowa's defense is not a good defense to not be able to run against. And they'll pick you off if you throw the ball. I'm taking the Hawkeyes. As gross, ooh, as miserable, as awful as their offense has been, they will punt and pick six their way to a 10-9 victory or whatever the number is. I'm taking them to cover the number.
I'm going to go Minnesota. Both of these teams have won their last three games after like a mid kind of like a lull in October. Iowa beat Wisconsin, Purdue, Northwestern. Minnesota beat Northwestern, Nebraska in Rutgers. Yeah, the 32.5 over under is incredible. That's 16-16. That's insane. In 2022. But here we are. But give me the Golden Gophers at home. I don't feel real great about it because, yes, Iowa invariably will win some kind of absurd 10-9 safety game or something like that. So, I'm going to go with the Golden Gophers at home to win it.
Hearing Pat pick Iowa is like finding out that Santa Claus isn't real. So I can't. I have to keep on living with what I've been told. Iowa stinks. I'm going with Minnesota to cover. It broke me a little bit to hear you flip that side, Pat, just a little bit. Someone's got to stay strong.
I still stay strong for the brand. I mean, I actively hate everything about Iowa's offense, all right? That has not changed. And they won by 2 touchdowns last week while producing no plays longer than 19 yards and no drives longer than 39. So, I mean, they're gross, but I'm taking them.
I have to stay with the Golden Gophers here. That's my selection.
I'm with Pat on this. Iowa, 2.5 points is a ton in a game this small. They're going to punt their way. It's going to be a special teams play. They're going to dominate defensively. Iowa is going to win this football game, or at least cover 2.5. I don't really care if they win or not. Next game, number 7, USC at number 16, UCLA. USC is giving 2.5. Bruins are home dogs, 8 p.m. Fox. Ross, what you think? Battle of L.A.
Yeah, this one's been like all season. I think the debate has been who's, you know, which L.A. team is better, USC or UCLA. We've been kind of going back and forth and back and forth. If you look at the stats, everything's pretty close statistically, except, you know, USC is a better passing team. UCLA is a better rushing team. They're very close in total yards a game. 9th for UCLA, 12th for USC. Points for, points scored, points against, all fairly close. This is a tight one, and I think it will be a close, high scoring game. I'm gonna say USC wins in the Rose Bowl, and it keeps the Pac-12 playoff hopes alive and covers that that tiny number of 2.5.
Oh, I'm with you. I think. This will, as you said earlier in the pod, Ross, be like 55-50. I don't see either team getting many stops. It could be come down to who gets a turnover or two, as opposed to who gets actually to force the other team's punt team onto the field. So I think USC's getting some players back, I believe, from injury. They will get Jordan Addison, I think, probably back more involved after he missed a couple of games and he was really a non-factor in the last game. But Caleb Williams, I think, is the best player on the field. And I will take USC to win outright and certainly cover the spread.
I think USC is playing for a lot in this game, especially with them rooting for Notre Dame to beat Boston College this week. So then next week for their big rivalry game, they will have maybe a better win versus a good Notre Dame team, which is a stretch to say after the beginning of the year, but there's a lot for them to play for, and maybe they get a little bit of help. So in a need-to-win game, I have USC covering versus UCLA.
Love Zach Charbonneau at UCLA, but I like Caleb Williams a little bit more, so I'll take the Trojans. Number 10, Utah at number 12, Oregon. Oregon is giving 2.5. Pac-12 after dark, 10:30 on ESPN. Pat, back to you.
Yeah, that number, I think, maybe reflects some concern about how healthy Bo Nix is, because otherwise I don't see it. I mean, Utah's a good team for sure, but I think Oregon is a better team that coughed up a hairball, you know, at the end against Washington. I expect them to bounce back strong. They have a great home field advantage there. I think Oregon is certainly more than 2 points better than Utah, so give me the Ducks.
Same thing. Weird number. Really, really weird number for Oregon to be at home against a Utah team in just be a 2.5 point favorite. So, which makes me think that Vegas knows something. But give me the Ducks to cover by a field goal.
I'm gonna stay away from the fraudulent Utah that made me look silly on this show. So I'm gonna stay with Oregon here, even though they probably made me look equally as much of a goofball, saying that they could just flip a switch at any time and go up 14 after they'd lost to Washington. So really no love for either of these teams, but I'll go with the Ducks.
I like the bitterness that Sean takes with him into these picks.
Yes. You know? Yeah, they're very personal. They're very personal. I'll take the Ducks on that. All right, lock of the week time. Who's got one?
I got one. LSU plays host to UAB in this last non-conference game of the season before they travel to College Station for a big one, because they can keep their college football playoff hopes alive. The Tigers, as you guys remember, the year was 2000, 22 years ago, and Nick Saban was in his first year, like Brian Kelly in his first year, and they hosted UAB for homecoming, LSU did, and Nick Saban and LSU lost, I think, 13-10 to UAB, I believe, on like a field goal. I don't think it repeats, and in fact, my lock would be LSU to cover the 14.5 at home against UAB. They're going back down to the Bayou where it's somewhat warm. They escaped Fayetteville with a win, kind of on a roll here. Four or five straight LSU has. So give me the Tigers to cover the 14.5 against the Blazers.
Certified lock.
All right, I'm going to the American Athletic Conference here, and everybody's darling for quite a while with good reason was Tulane. And the Tulane Highway coming in from Dallas has got a really hot offense coming from SMU. So I am going to take the Mustangs to go in and play a Green Wave team that's going to have a little bit of a letdown. They had the big game there with UCF. They got beaten in that. I don't see them slowing down an offense that is just blowing up right now for SMU. Their last two games, 642 yards, 553 yards, 7.7 yards per play, 8.1 yards per play. Took a while for Rhett Lashley and Tanner Mordecai and everybody to get on the same page, but they are there now. And SMU is going to win as a road dog and cover.
Certified lock.
The entire show it has terrified me for my lock of the week earlier with the possible upset talk, where I had selected TCU covering 2.5 versus Baylor. I'm going to stick with it. They haven't let me down so far this season. Ross picking them to win, he kind of scares me a little bit, because that might flip the script on it, but I'll go with the Horned Frogs giving 2.5.
Certified lock.
All right, I'm going to go bold. What the hell at this point, right? My locks have been good. Washington is hosting Colorado. Washington is giving 30.5. They are playing great. Colorado is prone to giving up a lot of points. And Washington is prone to scoring a lot of points. Michael Penix Jr., they still have something to play for. Washington, Colorado is running out the season. 1-9 total debacle. I think Washington buries Colorado by more than 30.5. And that is a lot of points in a conference game. But I'm going to do it. Go Huskies. That is my lock of the week.
Certified lock.
There you go. All right, we will be back Sunday to break down week 12, see if any of these big upsets came through, see if anyone else completed a marathon while smoking a pack. Maybe someone tries to smoke two packs next time, go one better. That could be the new Guinness record. How many cigarettes can you smoke while running a marathon?
Yeah, let's we up need the more dose. Sports. Come on.
Yeah. While chewing Nicorette, like in between, never know. Anyway,
my wife would shoot me if she heard me recording a podcast advocating smoking of any kind, much less in a marathon. Fortunately,
well,
she
you
doesn't
tell her to take it up with Uncle Chen. Take it up with Uncle Chen.
That's right.
Not us.
She will lecture Uncle Chen. Trust me.
All right. We'll let it go. We'll get them two together. All right. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Continue to subscribe, especially all our new Wyoming listeners. Come on, people. Yeah. Tell your friends about us. Leave us nice reviews. We will talk to you later.